Hi, I'm Terry Marr. Welcome to Traveling on Chris. For the next half hour, we'll feature travel tips and articles from a variety of publications. And actually, we're going to start where we picked up last week with... Oh, shoot, I just had the page. 36 Hours, Itineraries for a Weekend Outing or a Stop Along the Way. This is from the New York Times via the Hartford Current. Glasgow, Scotland. Glasgow, Scotland's largest city, crackles with character. It's a hub of grassroots energy where art shows, plant sales, and film screenings pop up in tenement flats, railway waiting rooms, and disused buildings. Once known as the second city of the British Empire, Glasgow struggled to reinvent itself after the closure of its shipyards. Now, cultural hotspots have sprung up in outlying neighborhoods, like pockets of the South Side, for example, or Dennistown in the East End, and plans are underway to revive the city center. Glasgow is a full global banquet, yes, so much more than deep-fried Mars bars, the battered chocolate invention of Scottish fish and chip shops, and a love of live music. Check the roster at classic venues such as Barlow Land Ballroom. Another thing you'll get to know in Glasgow is its infinite variations of rain. Be waterproof top to bottom, and you're off to a good start. Natalie Whittle with this. Friday, 3 p.m., visit a top museum. Start your weekend at the Burrell Collection, a glass-roofed art museum that rises out of a meadow in the city's southern Pollock Country Park. The 9,000-piece collection was donated by the city at the close of World War II by William Burrell, a Glasgow shipping merchant, and opened in this specially commissioned building in 1983. The museum reopened in 2022 after a six-year refurbishment of its red sandstone, glass, and wood interiors. Though it is busy, the Burrell offers a peaceful immersion in an unmistakably personal collection. Drifting from Degas and Rembrandt to tabernacles, tulip motif textiles, and ancient Chinese roof tiles, the tapestries are especially wonderful, including the palatially sized Wagner garden carpet made by master weavers in 17th century Iran. 4:30 p.m., try a zingy gelato. Pollock Park belongs to the South Side, a catch-all nickname for the city's more suburban half below the River Clyde. Rent an OVO bike share from the dock outside the Burrell and cycle by Edwardian Vias on Springkill Avenue and Dalzell Drive, and tenements built during the late 19th century industrial boom. Entering the Strathbungo area, see the Grecian-influenced houses at 110 Moray Place by the Scottish architect Alexander Thompson, whose nickname was Greek. Farther south is Thompson's Homewood House, now a museum. Dock the bike and check out the peach pink La Gelatessa on Nithsdale Road, which draws crowds for its seasonal gelato and chocolate fountain. Glasgow, despite its rain, has excellent ice cream, partly because of post-World War I Italian immigration. Also visit the Old School University Cafe in Partick Hill. 7:30 p.m., enjoy Chinese cooking. A steamed-up restaurant window strung with Chinese lanterns promises a satisfying meal on a cold Glasgow night, and the real Wan does not disappoint. In the Cathcart area of the South Side, this tiny gem, modeled on a street food cafe, draws customers from across the city. The unfussy decor and great affordable food in a shoebox space is typical of Glasgow's do-it-yourself spirit. Its young head chef, Leo Wuhusan, sends out smoky-flavored southern gizao dishes, hand-pulled noodles and house-made chili oils, and sauces from an elbow-to-elbow kitchen. Try the chunky Jita noodles with aromatic, garlicky beef ragout, or the fabulous caramel-coated pork ribs, flash-fried in aged dark vinegar, whose recipe is credited to Ms. Hassan's aunt. Reserve ahead. There are just four tables. Saturday, 10 a.m., grab a brekkie roll. If it's not raining, take advantage of clear skies with a botanic stroll on Glasgow's affluent West End. Grab breakfast at Paper Cup, a small and friendly cafe that has original period details, like egg and dart molding and an ornate ceiling rose. Try the brekkie roll with a sausage patty or eggs on toast with a side of vegan haggis. From the cafe, wander to the Glasgow Botanic Gardens, either directly along the Great Western Road, or take the more meandering Kelvin Walkway down by the River Kelvin, crossing the blue steel Botanic Gardens footbridge to emerge into the scented gardens on the other bank. Enter the domed Kibble Palace, a spectacular glass house in which you'll explore a jungle of orchids, begonias, and ferns, among other leafy treasures. Noon, browse Home Goods. Glaswegians have an appetite for sustainable shopping and for secondhand goods of all stripes. Who's, next to the Botanic Garden, stocks chic Scandi home goods, while the Glasgow Vintage Company, farther along Great Western Road from Paper Cup, has a thoughtful selection of secondhand Scottish knitwear alongside show-stopping coats and dresses from the 1970s. Up the hill on Otago Street, above Perch and Rest Coffee, Kelvin Apothecary sells a nice range of gifts including handmade Scottish soaps and wooden laundry and cleaning tools. In the cobbled Otago Lane is the chaotic Voltaire and Rousseau secondhand bookshop with teetering vertical book piles. Unlike many Glasgow shops, the store isn't the most dog-friendly because of the resident cat, Bibi, who supervises from his perch at the till. 1 p.m. Sip natural wine. The best seat at Brett is at its long zinc counter where you can watch the chef Colin Anderson and his brigade grill fine Scottish produce, although outdoor tables facing Great Western Road have blankets ready for chilly Glasgow days. The menu has good-sized dishes that include squid a la plancha with diced chorizo and a creamy potato and lemongrass sauce, and Aberdeenshire lamb rump carved into juicy rounds with a side of extra buttery Dauphine potatoes. Even the bread impresses. An excellent sourdough comes with chicken fat or smoked olive oil. Much of the list favors natural wine, and the house white, a Venetian Chardonnay Garganiga blend, is a good value. 3 p.m. Trace Medical History. Crammed to the rafters with historical curios, the Hunterian Museum is Scotland's oldest public museum, opened in 1807. The cloisters at its entrance are as atmospheric as the gallery itself, which is housed inside a grand hall with exposed beams in the Gilbert Scott Building, part of the University of Glasgow. The collection, begun in the 18th century by the wealthy obstetrician Dr. William Hunter, who went on to be Queen Charlotte's personal physician, leans toward the early pursuit of medicine with gruesome tools and pickled human parts. Across the road, the Hunterian Art Gallery shows the recreated living quarters of the Glasgow architect Charles Rennie Mackintosh and his artist wife, Margaret MacDonald Mackintosh. Mackintosh designed the Glasgow School of Art in the city center, which is currently sheathed in scaffolding after a devastating fire in 2018. 7 p.m., take a Viaggio in Italia. Celentano's, a cozy wood-paneled restaurant with a lawn bar, is cocooned inside Cathedral House, a former Victorian hostel right across the street from Glasgow Cathedral's Gothic spires. Today, the building is the Cathedral House Hotel, which has 8 boutique rooms above the restaurant. Run by a Scottish couple who fell in love with Italy, Celentano's serves clever dishes like lasagna fritti, tiny deep-fried lasagna parcels and cod donuts, creamy whipped fish and a fine breadcrumb crust, as well as house-made pastas. The cocktails are seasonal like the food. A rum daiquiri could feature pickled black currant, and dessert includes a very rich espresso tiramisu. In the summer, there are lovely outdoor tables with a view across to the hillside necropolis, a Victorian garden cemetery. 10 p.m., have a dram. The Pot Still Pub near Glasgow Central Railway Station brings around 950 whiskies, mostly single malts, into one easygoing bar. There has been a pub in this spot for more than 100 years. This iteration has simple decor of barewood floors and Spartan tables. Take your pick from the library of whiskey, from Grant's Blended Whiskey to a 32-year-old Macallan. Scottish licensing means that most pubs close at the bell of midnight, which can speed up the pace of nightcaps accordingly. For other traditional Scottish drinking dens, try the Doublet off Great Western Road or on the south side, the perfectly preserved, thick-carpeted parlors of the Lauriston or the ornate Irish bar, Herati's. Sunday, 9:30 a.m., see the mountaintops. Gather a breakfast picnic to enjoy in the Southside's Queen's Park from one of the many great local bakeries or cafes nearby. 287, check ahead for seasonal closures, is a bakery that uses stone-ground flours for its sourdoughs and baked treats, which include fruit custard brioches, Nordic cream buns, and cheese marmot scones. It also has a thoughtful selection of ceramics, art, and provisions for sale and benches and tables for morning coffee outside. From there, head up to Queen's Park's flagpole viewpoint to see the whole city spread at the foot of the Campsie Fells, a range of low volcanic hills. Also look for the peaks around Loch Lomond. On a clear day, the sight line stretches to the gnarled profile of Stob Benign Mountain in the southern highlands. 11 a.m., view a dimly lit past. To understand Glasgow, step inside its sandstone tenements. Though some of these apartment blocks were perceived as slums and demolished in the 1950s and 60s, they may have been a more successful model for high-density living than the new towns, the post-war planned communities. The tenement house and the Garnet Hill District is a museum run by the National Trust for Scotland within a former tenement flat. Comprising just four small rooms, the museum preserves a middle-class home of the shorthand typist Agnes Tord, who lived there from 1911 to 1965. Her modest possessions are poignantly arranged, a piano waiting to be played and a bathtub with carbolic soap ready for a, quote, duck, unquote, or what the Scots call a soak. There are surprises, too. A cupboard door in the formal parlor reveals, quote, hole-in-the-wall, unquote, sleeping quarters for guests and a concealed and recessed bed. Noon, finish with a lobster. Finiston, the buzzy neighborhood just below Kelvin Grove Art Gallery and Museum, has a long run of drinking and dining spots on Argyle Street and toward Kelvin Grove Park. Finish your weekend with a seafood blowout at Crab Shack, a galley-shaped bistro with a relaxed bar. Creative menu specials might feature Scottish Barra Island cockles with ginger and pork broth, or Loch Fyne oysters with chorizo butter, alongside the classics of langoustines, lobster, and dressed crab at market prices. There is a short non-fish list, including steak frites and vegetable risotto. The owners branched out with Crab Shack Botanics, another restaurant farther into the West End, which has a slightly more corporate feel inside, but good people watching from the dining benches outside. Key stops, Pollock Country Park on the south side is Glasgow's largest green space, home to the impressive Burrell collection, as well as a lovely walled garden and much-photographed Highland cows. Glasgow Botanic Gardens, an oasis at the heart of the West End, the central area north of the River Clyde, features a spectacular glasshouse. Hunterian Museum is a wonderfully eclectic collection of antiquities inside the splendor of the University of Glasgow campus, with the Mackintosh House, a replica of the Scottish architect Charles Rennie Mackintosh's home interiors, across the street. Queen's Park on the south side offers views of Glasgow and, on a clear day, the mountains beyond. It is also a good starting point for exploring the many neighborhoods in the surrounding area, Strathbungo, Pollock Shields, Govanhill, and Battlefield. Okay, Montreal. Bonjour. Hi. The ubiquitous greeting servers and shopkeepers use to figure out whether you prefer French or English encapsulate so much about Montreal, which, like its province Quebec, retains a strong French-Canadian identity. In this 382-year-old city of 1.78 million, which Mark Twain once described as a place, quote, where you couldn't throw a brick without breaking a church window, unquote, one of Canada's most vibrant LGBTQ scenes thrives in communities formed by Jewish, African, Asian, Italian, Portuguese, and Haitian immigrants all offer something special to see and taste. The city is on an upswing. Modern apartment buildings, cafes, and bike paths are popping up in formerly industrial Griffintown, while the Plateau and Mile End areas offer art and music worthy of the place that nurtured Arcade Fire and Leonard Cohen. There is too much for just 36 hours, but if you bring some good walking shoes, you'll find terrific meals, stunning views atop Mont Royal, and a creative spirit that comes across in any language. Daniel Adkisson with this. Friday, 8 p.m., dined in at a desanctified church. Montreal is teeming with steeples and spires, though attendance at Mass has dwindled in Quebec. Many churches have found new life as community spaces and restaurants, including the desanctified St. Joseph's Church, which was built in 1861 in the Petit Bourgogne neighborhood. If the facade of the church impresses you, wait until you walk around to Candide in the former rectory. Sit at the bar, and the industrious, mostly young kitchen staff will happily explain the pre-fee-only menu, which changes monthly. Fresh Quebec-produced ingredients shine in dishes like a kohlrabi, bean and yogurt salad, a riot of crisp and creamy textures. The presentation is as fun as it is delicious. For one dessert choice, a Le Frere Chasseur cheese shaved thin on a rotary curler arrives looking like buttery flower petals. 10 p.m., feel the love in the gay village. The signs along the Rue St. Catherine, the main axis of the gay village, declare Quartier Inclusif, a reminder that Montreal takes inclusion seriously. The street closed to cars through the village most of the summer and early fall, becomes a runway on Friday and Saturday nights, when all parts, all ages too, of the LGBTQ spectrum gather at bars and clubs to sing karaoke, dance, and show off their fiercest looks. Leather is welcome at the cozy Eagle Noir or Black Eagle Bar, but you won't need to be wearing any to have a good time. Over a pint of beer, you might strike up a conversation with a friendly Montrealer. If the weather is nice, finish your night at the multi-floor complex Sky Night Club with a cocktail at the rooftop bar. Saturday, 9 a.m., enjoy a classic Montreal bagel downtown. In an urban zone of glass facades, concrete walls, and chain restaurants, Solet Cafe offers an orange tree-decorated oasis with an outdoor garden. It's a relaxing hideaway for people watching while sipping big cups of coffee. Try an everything bagel made by St. Viateur, a classic purveyor of the Big Hold Montreal variety, loaded with guacamole, feta, and a sunny-side-up egg. After breakfast, check out the Hotel Le German next door. Its concrete facade painted since 2021, with a kaleidoscopic mural called Dazzle My Heart. The hotel, which emerged from a major renovation early 2020, occupies the modernist former headquarters of a professional organization for engineers that was built in 1967, when the World's Fair, also called Expo 67, transformed much of Montreal's skyline. 10 a.m. Appreciate Indigenous Design and Craft. Occupying an arts and crafts-inspired former McGill University building just north of downtown, the McCord Stewart Museum specializes in the history of Montreal. The permanent Indigenous Voices of Today exhibition spotlights about 100 objects, including snowshoes, knives, beaded bags, and an extraordinary parka made of waterproof, breathable animal intestinal membranes from 11 nations in Quebec, letting individual members of those nations explain the item's significance through plaques and videos. One section of the exhibition focuses on the devastating impact that Canada's residential school system had on Indigenous communities, a dark chapter the country is still wrestling to understand. On the museum's top floor, see the Canadian artist James Duncan's panoramic autumnal watercolors of 19th century Montreal. Many were painted from the top of Mont Royal, looking down toward the St. Lawrence River, showing fields and bucolic copper and golden groves where gleaming skyscrapers now stand. 11:30 a.m., head to toe. Now it's time to see for yourself how those views from the top of Mont Royal have changed. Climb the steps at the top of Rue Peel to the summit of what locals call the mountain, taking in the surroundings of a park designed by Frederick Law Olmsted along a trail named for him. At the Condiaronc Belvedere, a spacious stone plaza at the top, you're likely to see a wide variety of activities, possibly even juggling and unicycle riding. Remember that Montreal is the headquarters of Cirque du Soleil. Compare the graceful new cable-stayed Samuel de Champlain Bridge, opened in 2019 with a nearby Victoria Bridge, a former railroad crossing that now carries cars too, that was hailed as the eighth wonder of the world when its first wrought iron incarnation officially opened in 1860. 1:30 p.m., ride to an old-school deli. No visit to Montreal is complete without a pile of smoked meat, a savory, peppery cross between pastrami and corned beef that appears in poutines and on pizzas as well as in overflowing sandwiches that are the trademark of Montreal's Jewish delis. While many visitors line up at the historic Schwartz's Deli, one of the oldest in Canada, the 77-year-old Snowden Deli is a little harder to get to, but worth the effort. Take the metro to the Snowden stop or ride a Bixie bike along a dedicated cycling lane on the Chemin de la Côte Saint-Antoine, which passes through Westmount, one of Canada's wealthiest enclaves. Grab a spacious booth at the deli and enjoy a smoked meat sandwich, medium fat, with a smear of yellow mustard on pillowy light rye, a cot black cherry soda, and a plateful of sharp sour pickles. 3 p.m., shop and sip coffee in the heart of the city. Boulevard Saint-Laurent, which divides the city into east and west, also has many of its best shops and cafes. In a rambling mural-covered row house, you'll find Eva B., kind of gray gardens for the vintage set, with its mannequins, creaky wooden floors and shelves groaning with sometimes creepy dolls and well-worn books. Then grab a pick-me-up at Dispatch Coffee, a stylish stripped-down space, and head farther up the boulevard to admire the wares of, or at, Au Miroir, a shop packed with mirrors of all sizes and shapes, as well as Style Label Antiquities and Le Pompadour, which are bursting with charming mid-century modern pieces, old globes, pendant lamps, and almost any other home decoration you can imagine. Looking for a zebra-striped armchair? Le Pompadour may have just the piece. 6:30 p.m., Feast on Creativity. Boulevard Saint-Laurent eventually leads all the way to Mile End, the locus of Montreal's creative class, northeast of downtown and Parc de Mont-Royal. The neighborhood, which was once a blue-collar hub of Montreal's Jewish community, now abounds in bars, clubs, and restaurants. Like Butterbloom, a solid choice for dinner with a menu that includes pork schnitzel with a breading of panko, and pumpkin and sunflower seeds with jalapeno mayonnaise, cherry tomatoes, corn, and marinated mushrooms. Keep the good times going with a cocktail and a slightly ironic game of table tennis at the Ping Pong Club, a comfy and convivial bar nearby. 10 p.m., raise a glass to the upstairs. Hang on. The giant Molson Brewery once dominated Montreal's riverfront in the same way that its commercial brews dominated menus. Around the city. But in the last decade, microbreweries have exploded onto the scene, many now sharing Mile End with the pioneer Dieu de Seal, which turned 25 in September. Helm, one of the upstairs, has a particularly enticing offering of rotating brews in a welcoming space with slate floors, a U-shaped bar, and a ceiling draped in dangling vines. The name Helm stands for Houblon Eau Louver and malt, hops, water, yeast, and malt. The main ingredients of what you're about to drink, and they take their craft seriously with house-brewed stouts, bitters, and IPAs. Sunday, 9 a.m., no place like Dome. The lasting impression of Expo 67 is most visible on the islands of Parc Jean-Drapeau, the site of many of the exhibitions. The former United States Pavilion with a huge Buckminster, floor-designed geodesic dome, inspired the one at Disney's Epcot Center, is now the Biosphere, the museum occupying a graceful, glassy building perched on tall stilts in the center of the dome. The acrylic panels of the dome burned in a 1976 fire, leaving just a steel structure. Besides being breathtakingly beautiful, the museum offers interactive exhibitions, most of them kid-friendly, about environmental issues and climate change. While you're on the island, be sure to check out Trois Discs, a 70-foot-tall stainless steel sculpture that the artist Alexander Calder created in 1967 for the World's Fair. 10 a.m., ride along the river. Contrast modern architecture with the industrial past by riding a Bixie bike from Parc Jean-Drapeau across the Concordia Bridge toward downtown. Watch for the jungle-like lines of Habitat 67, the brutalist apartment complex designed by the architect Moshe Safdie. The path leads around the Five Rosses flour mill, whose flashing sign is as beloved by Montrealers as a Sitco sign is by Bostonians. Montreal's location near the eastern end of the Great Lakes helped make it the largest grain port in North America in the 1920s, a legacy you can see in the steamship-like form of Silo No. 5, a hulking grain elevator that has stood empty since the mid-1990s. The path follows the Lachine Canal through Griffintown, a mushrooming cluster of glassy new buildings, where you can stop for a hand-rolled bagel with cream cheese at La Trau, a tiny cafe with its own oven. 11 a.m., get a massage on water. Listen for the sound of the water flowing over the canal locks. It will be your soundtrack to relaxation at Boda Boda, a luxurious spa that began aboard an old ferry boat docked near the old port and has expanded to include a nearby land-based garden with a complex of pools. The boat offers hot tubs, cold plunges, steam rooms, dry saunas, and massages in a silent environment. Signs reminding you not to talk are everywhere. Across a footbridge in the garden, you can talk there. You'll find pools ranging from hot to cold, one with a waterfall to massage your shoulders. Santa Barbara, California. Santa Barbara, with fewer than 90,000 people, barely makes it into California's 100 largest cities. But this coastal enclave has an outsized role in the state's history. Settled by the Spanish as a military fort and mission in the 1780s, the city and its surroundings, which include the Santa Ynez Mountains, have markers of its past everywhere, from indigenous Chumash cave paintings to the Adobe Presidio, Spanish fortress. Graced by fragrant climbing jasmine and purple blossom jacaranda, Santa Barbara looks almost too good for its age, and like the celebrities who live in the neighboring Montecito Hills, it has clearly had some work done in recent years. Among the additions is Moxie, the Wolf Museum of Exploration and Innovation, which is a curious child's dream with its rooftop garden devoted to rambunctious water play. Free to moon with this. Friday, 3 p.m., get a view from the top. Start with a pick-me-up at Locum, a Turkish sweet shop on State Street, Santa Barbara's main drag. Take your pistachio coffee to stroll down State Street, which closed to cars in the pandemic and is now a tree-lined pedestrian and cycling avenue. Continue to the Spanish colonial Santa Barbara County Courthouse, surrounded by sunken gardens, fountains, and bunya-bunya trees. Climb to the courthouse's clock tower for a 360-degree view of the city. On a clear day, you can see the 4,000-foot La Cumbre Peak and the distant Channel Islands. On your way down, dip into the gilded mural room, where the brutal Spanish conquest of California's indigenous population is depicted as an act of glory. 4 p.m., take California home. Is it even a trip to California if you don't come home with a caftan? Find yours at Arlington Plaza's Folly. Delightfully cluttered, the shop sells everything from colorful enamel cups to linen caftans, paintings by local artists to ephemera like a cast iron bottle opener shaped like a crowned frog. Two blocks south in Victoria Court, another shop, Domusol leans heavily on Santa Barbara County-based producers, but it also embraces eclectic products from abroad. Traditional indigo aprons from Japan and hand-woven Chilean lampshades sit alongside hand-carved driftwood spoons by the local artist Ray Gabaladon and blue-hued mugs by the local ceramicist Lori Stout. 5 p.m., swirl a glass or two. Santa Barbara County has nearly 275 wineries and 7 distinct wine regions. More than 20 tasting rooms downtown offer a walkable introduction. Near the historic Presidio neighborhood, grab a reservation at Frequency, a courtyard tasting room planted with citrus and palms. Compare two Syrahs made with grapes from separate vineyards to learn how different climates, the cool marine air of the Santa Rita Hills versus the valley heat of Los Alamos, impart flavor. Then head 6 blocks south to the Funk Zone, the nightlife district at the foot of State Street, for a tasting at the Valley Project, a free-spirited little sister to the established and revered Cunin Wines. The tasting room's floor-to-ceiling chalk mural of Santa Barbara's wine appellations is worth a visit in itself. 7:30 p.m., dine in the New World. Eat on the flower-draped patio of La Paloma Cafe, built on the figurative ruins of two of Santa Barbara's most beloved restaurants, a mid-century institution and the neon-lit Paradise Cafe, which closed in late 2020. La Paloma takes this lineage seriously, keeping the neon and restoring the building's murals. The restaurant's unmissable dish also nods to heritage. A Wagyu tri-tip with salsa, horseradish, and pinquito beans is a gussied-up version of Santa Barbara's regional barbecue known as Santa Maria style. For dessert, stroll 1 block to Tondi Gelato. Shop features both classic flavors and seasonal sorbetto made with fruits like guava and persimmon from the Santa Barbara Farmers Market. 9:30 p.m., cap off the night. Veer to the Presidio and find some local color at Lovejoy's Pickle Room, a bar in a former 1940s-era Chinese restaurant. Drink a classic Mai Tai among the bar's red-tasseled lanterns, golden walls, and red vinyl booths. A couple of blocks up State Street in the Arts District is the Good Lion, a cocktail bar. It serves a fine coastal Negroni made with a Spanish herbal gin, a wine-based Corsican aperitif, Amaro for bitterness, and a hint of anise in a dim-lit, Art Deco-inspired space alongside the historic Granada Theater. Saturday, 8:30 a.m., discover a garden gem. Sapodilicea Patisserie and Cafe for a pastry from its rotating selection like the ricotta and squash blossom Danish. Be on time for your 9:15 a.m. admission to Ghana Walska Lotus Land, where you'll have to reserve far in advance to be one of the 15,000 people a year granted access. This magical 37-acre garden in the Montecito Highlands is the work of the eclectic Polish singer Ghana Walska, who, according to myth, may or may not be buried somewhere on her sprawling property. Wander through cactus forests to immaculate Japanese gardens to lush tropical orchids, banana trees, and ginger plants. 1:30 a.m., eat Mexican soul food. In the city of taquerias, Corazon Commodore stands out, a project of the chef Ramon Velasquez, who earned Michelin recognition for his taco stand at Santa Barbara's Public Market. Commodore, a casual homestyle restaurant, serves dishes inspired by his mom when he was growing up in Guadalajara. The airy dining room, which has a TV playing nostalgic black and white Mexican movies, clangs with the sounds of an open kitchen and smells of dishes like the rich, complex pozole, a traditional stew made with hominy and long cooked pork broth. 2 p.m., get out on the water. After years of drought, Cachuma Lake, Santa Barbara's expansive reservoir about 30 minutes out of town, It's full for the first time in more than a decade. Take Highway 154 over the San Marcos Pass to the Santa Ynez Valley to see the lake glistening between oak-covered hills. The drive is part of the experience with potential stops including the Chumash Painted Cave State Historic Park, where visitors can see centuries-old rock art by the indigenous Chumash people, and the Tecapiz Trailhead for those who would rather hike than float. At Chuma Lake Recreation Area, rent a kayak or boat from the Rocky Mountain Recreation Company. Because the lake is a reservoir, swimming isn't permitted, but the park has a pool and hooked bar and grill as picnic tables beside the lake with live music on weekends. That's all the traveling time we have today. I'm Terry Marr. So long until next time.